Greetings, magnificent souls, to the Lily Bewley podcast, where we have open and honest discussions about ourselves. This is your host, Lily Bewley. I'm honored to have conversations here with thought leaders, visionaries, healers, and even solo conversations with myself about things I am currently reflecting on. This is a place where we break down, break away, and break through our emotional trauma, allowing ourselves to be healthy, be happy, and live a peaceful life. We are tired of being sick and tired. We are tired, but we are not giving up. We know that there is something magnificent inside of us. And because we are fighting daily, hourly, and by the minute, fighting ourselves, our jobs, our unhappiness, we have to do things differently. We have to break the cycle. We don't have a million chances. We have to be happy now. We have to find a way. So how do we do that? How is that possible? If you look around at what society is telling you, they tell you that what we're doing is impossible. Yet it's happening every single day. And it's happening through the practice and the love that we call awakening the magnificent soul. We are all magnificent souls, and these are our stories of healing. Today in episode 163, I welcome Stacy Urig to the show to chat about trauma and not being broken. Before we get into the show, don't forget to let me know your thoughts about this episode or anything you would like me to cover on future podcasts by dropping me a DM on Instagram. Remember, it is a safe place and I would welcome the discussion. Also, a request, if you are enjoying the show, please rate, please share, and please review so we can get the word out to more and more souls who want to heal. And now on to today's episode. Stacy Urig is a trauma recovery coach. She builds upon decades of experience supporting individuals through life's trials and her profound journey. She established Flip Your Mindset in 2020, and through personalized coaching, Stacy empowers her clients to perceive their struggles from a fresh perspective, fostering a sense of empowerment, purpose, and inner tranquility. Please enjoy this conversation with Stacy Urig. All right, Stacy, welcome to the show. I was honored to be a guest a few times on your podcast, and we can talk a little bit more about where people can find you on that. So I'm super excited to talk and dive into trauma with you. You are a trauma expert. You're an RTT, and we can talk all about what that means, what you do with your clients. But basically, you and I are both trauma geeks, is what I like to say.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
Yes. So
self-proclaimed
trauma geeks. So, you know, this time is really, I'd love to get an idea as far as, you know, we can start with how did you get into this? Because I think that's always interesting. Take the lead and introduce yourself to the audience.
That's probably the most common question I get asked on interviews is how did you get into this? And my answer is always the same. I think anybody that works in trauma as a desired area of expertise has worked through their own trauma. And so obviously I came into it because I got so curious about why, you know, 20 years of therapy, and I put that in quotes, still left me feeling so activated in my system all the time. I was still suffering from anxiety, still suffering from panic attacks. Finally, after all that mobilization and activation, dropped into what I'm going to call a depression, but I wasn't sad. I wasn't feeling sad or depressed. I was numb and apathetic and lethargic and exhausted, right? Fatigued after being in that activated role and mode for like 20 years. And I couldn't understand. I'd been through 6 therapists. Why am I still so stuck? And so I really, that took me on a huge personal journey that started in 2012. So 12 years ago, where I started voraciously seeking answers, and everything I started coming across hit me in the face of how was nobody telling me this stuff?
Mm-hmm. So true.
Why am I learning this on my own?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading Brené Brown's Daring Greatly, and I read it so fast, and I ate it like the best piece of chocolate cake I've ever had in my life. And I closed it and said to my husband, I just got more out of that book than I did in 20 years of therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into being a trauma specialist and being a coach that focuses on trauma by healing from my own, or being on my own healing journey. I don't think we're ever fully healed.
Mm-hmm.
And learning so much and being able to see it so clearly that I felt very called to come up with ways to make it simple for other people.
I love that. I love that. I think ideally, tell me how you feel about this, but I think ideally, and based off what I know and the journey that I've been through and the people that I help now as well, I think it's ideally, I think you would want someone helping you that have walked the journey themselves, right?
Well, and that's, and I think that's yeah, I think everyone's walked it. And I think part of, look, I'm not anti-therapy. I should let that be very clear. I'm not anti-therapy. I have a large family. Many of us have gone to therapists. I'm working with my own therapist now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm not anti-therapist. However, that being said, you know, I couldn't learn the things I needed to learn from the therapists I had been with up to that point. And what did you just say? Do you remember, Lily? Because it started me on a thought process.
Well, I was saying, like, ideally you would want someone helping you that has walked the same path.
That's my point. We've all walked it. So what's so frustrating, and at least I have a therapist that is more coach-like,
mm-hmm.
therapists are kind of trained to not share their personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't get that attunement and you can't feel like other if the person across from you is not letting them know that they have felt it or they have resonated with it themselves. Mm-hmm. The first time I ever worked with a coach instead of a therapist, and they shared with me
mm-hmm.
their own personal struggle, I was mm-hmm. like, oh my God, is she supposed to be saying that? Like, I was shocked. Mm-hmm. I still remember it.
Mm-hmm. Same.
And I remember how refreshing it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so less alone. So it's not that the therapist hasn't walked the walk or walked the journey. They're kind of disencouraged within the standards that they have to follow to share that.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough for the person on the receiving end, because it makes the person, it can make the person feel less than, or maybe quote unquote broken.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It gives the assumption the other person doesn't have a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think a lot of the trauma that we experience, whether that be if you're in, you know, abusive, covert, overt, you know, abusive type of situations, a lot of it is emotional. So without, you know, or it's physical and then it's emotional. You don't have somebody to process it with. You don't have someone to lean on. You don't have the support. So it's interesting, because I think for me, the reason that came up for me is because that's been my struggle with therapy as well, is that I don't feel the attunement. I don't feel the personalization. I don't feel that the you know, in order to learn a secure attachment, there has to be some kind of secure model or secure representative, right? Which is very hard. And I understand, again, like, I do think that therapy has its place. But I think if you're coming to that point where you've been in therapy, like you had for 20 years, and then continue to hit a wall of like, well, why can't I, you know, why isn't this long lasting? Or why can't I get the things that I think I know that I want or that I need? And it's like these last kind of pieces that we need to put together. I think people don't talk about that very often.
And I think my experience is probably many people's experience, which is this. I had a lot of trauma. I can now say I didn't have that language at 15 years old, mm-hmm. but I had a lot of very adverse experiences starting when I was 11. Mm-hmm. And by the time I was 15, it was too much to bear. And I basically said, if you do not send me to therapy, I'm running away. Like, I was at my tipping point. I had asked for mm-hmm. a long time to see a therapist. This was 1986. Mm-hmm. Nobody was going to therapy in 1986 unless you were really broken or psychotic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So it took a lot for my parent to swallow and allow me, quote unquote, to go. I needed the ride. I needed the money mm-hmm. to pay for this mm-hmm. very small copay, but still a copay. And, you know, that started my journey. And I will say, of all the therapists I ever worked with up until my current therapist, and I'm 52. So the first therapist I ever had at 15, she was the best one I ever had mm-hmm. up until the current one. Mm-hmm. Okay. At one point in my early 30s, let's call it 30, 31. So now I've been at this for 15 years. That's when I started having a breakdown. That's when my activation hit its wall. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do anything. I didn't know how to make a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. I would open my refrigerator mm-hmm. and not be able to make sense of anything I was seeing, mm-hmm. let alone pour a cup of milk. Mm-hmm. I was a very high functioning executive. I could open up a workbook in Excel and not know how to touch my keyboard. I just was done.
Frozen.
And I felt like I knew in my mind at that time, and I said it very clearly to one of my parents. I said, I'm not saying I would do this. I would never take this action, but I totally understand why somebody would want to stop living and would want to end a life, because I can't handle this sensation in my system anymore.
Yeah, 100%.
I literally cannot do it anymore. And mm-hmm. I don't know what else to do. Mm-hmm. This would have been 2002. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the suggestion was go back to my therapist and ask for a recommendation to a psychiatrist and get on medication. Nice. And that's what I did. And it was one of the first times, other than the person I worked with at 15, where I felt seen and understood from the psychiatrist. He was asking me the right questions. There's no question about that. And it would stunned me. He asked very poignant questions nobody had ever asked me before. However, this is when the model in the mental health field was changing, and he was not seeing clients. He would only see me for 15 minutes for medicine. Mm. But I really actually needed him to sure. see me, because he was the one that got it. He mm-hmm. understood what he was looking at. Nobody else did at that point. But one of the things that was complicating the situation was that I came, and I'm putting this again in quotes, from a long history of mental health disorders. So my grandmother was clinically depressed. She walked with severe depression. She was suicidal many times in my life. Mm-hmm. She attempted suicide many times. She ended up going through ECT shock treatment many times.
Same.
And therefore, I had a parent, no surprise, who was parented by that person, mm-hmm. Who was struggling with their own mental health. Mm-hmm. So when I was told, you come from a long lineage of this, and this is genetic. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, this is likely genetic. Mm-hmm. And it's a biochemical imbalance. This is what would always be said. Yep. And so here's the medication. And the medication I was given was Zoloft. I took it. I felt fucking great. Mm-hmm. So that all made sense to me. And so I stopped searching. Mm-hmm. This medication's working. Mm-hmm. I feel more regulated. I didn't have that language all the time. Mm-hmm. I just remember waking up after being on it for maybe a week and saying to my husband, I can now see I haven't taken a full breath in 20 years. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know I wasn't taking a full breath. I could breathe. Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember the last time I felt so unburdened. So I accepted that agreement. It made sense. It fit my narrative. It fit what I knew and understood. However, at some point, the Zoloft stopped working.
Right.
And so that left me feeling not fixable.
Mm-hmm.
See, I do come from this long line.
Mm-hmm.
And it is my birthright.
Mm-hmm.
And it is inherited.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me such a lack of agency and left me feeling so powerless and helpless in my own healing that I felt very, very stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened in my life was I had a very specific turn of events that for any person, even someone who has the best of mental health, would have felt very overwhelmed by. And so because my window of tolerance was so short and my coping abilities were so small, it derailed me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an absolute nervous breakdown for sure.
Yeah.
And so it was like a perfect storm. And that's when I ended up seeking out a coach and said, there's got to be something different here because nothing's worked and I can't do this again.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. What did you said earlier? You said I needed to learn about trauma. What was it at this point that you, what did you need to learn about trauma at that point?
Okay. So given all the things I just shared,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I tended to be someone that everybody went to all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow I was naturally attracting, no matter what job I ever had, what role I ever had, since I had been in my 20s, people had been seeking me out professionally and personally for advice on big life things.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I was good at it and I knew why I was good at it. When I was in my late 40s, after doing that for so many years, not as part of my profession,
mm-hmm.
I looked at my husband and said, this is the best part of my day every time.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to be doing this. I need to be doing just that. I'm not going back to school to become a therapist, but I think I could do this by way of coaching.
Mm-hmm.
So in my late 40s, say 48, 49, I was like, I'm going to have this up and running by the time I'm 50 and I'm going to run it for like 25 years. This is my goal. And he was like, okay. So I opened my coaching practice and very soon into my coaching practice, I became familiar with Marissa Peer's therapeutic model known as rapid transformational therapy. And I decided to get trained by her and go through that program. And while I was in that program and we're being trained on how to do hypnosis and rapid transformational therapy with people, there are very specific pieces to the model. And the very beginning of the model is inducing people and taking them back to what's called a scene, or I'll say a memory. And take a look at it from another view. And what I started to realize, even though this is not the language that was being used when we were trained, everything I was seeing was interpreted as traumatic to the person I was doing it with. So we were doing dyads and triads and working in practicum, okay, mm-hmm. not with a client.
Mm-hmm.
That was so obvious to me from the get. Mm-hmm. The word trauma was never being used, but I was hearing the word trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter what it was. It could have been as simple as someone not feeling seen, heard, or understood,
mm-hmm.
all the way to something that we would think of as trauma, like abuse, aggression, or violence.
Mm-hmm.
And it started making me rethink of my own lived experience,
mm-hmm.
and why it was so impactful and why I had been so stuck. So as that program was ending, I was now on a mission to understand everything I could about trauma, to answer your question.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
I immediately sought out a more formalized education on just trauma and mm-hmm. specifically childhood trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So I could understand what I was looking at, not just for my clients, but for myself and for the members of my family.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. What do you think are the biggest misconceptions about trauma?
That trauma is abuse, aggression, and violence, and that's it. Or, war. or witnessing something violent or aggression or abuse. The biggest misperception is that is the only thing that can be trauma. And the reality is anything that happens on a consistent basis that leaves us feeling unseen, unheard, insignificant, unsafe, and unimportant can be interpreted as traumatic and leaves an unhealed wound in our system. And when it's not addressed, it's pervasive.
Totally. I think it's important to point out, like, the way that I think of it is, and not really for me, I think, you know, I did go through some like really intense things when I was younger. But I think a lot of people don't realize that if you were like in childhood, for example, if you have a roof over your head and you're provided for, you could still have trauma. And a lot of it was emotional, developmental, et cetera. Right. So, and it's hard for those people, I think, I don't know who I'm talking to right now, whoever's listening, but it's hard for those people, I think, that, you know, there are parts of them that really recognize maybe how much they love their caregivers or their parents or their mothers, but that the truth is that they didn't get what they developmentally needed at points in time.
Yeah. I mean,
I think it's important to just to point out, like, the consistency of lack of emotional availability can still be traumatic. It can be traumatic differently for you than it is for me, which is why what's so great about what we do, it's so important, because, you know, I think you do the same thing too. It's like, we meet people where they are.
Yeah.
Mentally. And I think that's what part of the healing is.
You're making me think of my friend who, we were at a bar one night and we were talking, and she goes, well, I didn't have trauma. My family took me to Disney every year. We didn't struggle financially. There was always food on the table. My parents, you know, were together. There was no abuse. There was no aggression. There was no violence. But why am I still so stuck? And what I've learned about this person is one of the parents was actually not emotionally available at all.
Exactly.
And that's been a huge aha moment for her. And so, you know, for people that want to learn more about trauma, a great person to follow is Gabor Mate. And one of the things he says all the time is that sometimes trauma is not what happened. Trauma is what didn't happen, but should have.
Exactly.
And that's really it. We need to know we matter. That's where the connection comes in. And if there's any part of us that's not feeling that connection before we're aged 9 years old, the only decision we can come up with at that point is it must be me. So now it's changing the lens through which you're seeing yourself. And then that inherently affects the lens that you interact with other people through and the world through. And if it's through a lens of scarcity and not enoughness, it's going to impact your life, because you're going to develop habits and behaviors to counteract that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that makes a lot of sense. And I know that probably hit with somebody out there. I can feel it. What about healing trauma? What have you seen in the last, you know, 12 years that you've been in this work that is maybe a myth or also a misconception about what is healing trauma?
Well, I think the biggest myth is that there's an end point to being healed.
So true.
Right?
So true.
And I try to actually cut that off at the very beginning. And when I ask my client, like, what do they hope to gain by working together? They just say, I just want to feel better. And I'm like, okay, well, let's just talk about what that's going to look like. Because I don't want anybody having rose-colored glasses. And this is, again, my personal point of view and my personal philosophy. There's no end point to feeling healed. Healing is the journey we're on. And you'll be healing and healing and healing, and different layers are going to come off your entire lifetime. The goal is to not be done. The goal is to decrease. So decrease the frequency in which we feel activated, the intensity of how it feels, and the duration. Once we're in it, how long am I going to be in it? And if we can decrease it by making ourselves aware of when it's happening And then using the tips and tools and tricks that I've taught my client and that my client has harnessed, they can then find more time for peace in their life. Mm-hmm. Right? We're not trying to create the bandwidth for more shit. We're mm-hmm. trying to create the bandwidth for more joy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the biggest misperception about mm-hmm. healing mm-hmm. is that there's a beginning and an end. This is not about the destination. This is about the journey.
Totally. Totally. And I think that that's what I think one of the biggest problems I think right now, because I think people are using things like Instagram or things like books and podcasts in order to, you know, to get rid of symptoms, or like they use things to mask symptoms and short-term gain instead of long-term results. Yeah.
They want the quick fix. And I love my clients dearly. And I'm working with a gal right now she's in the dark night of the soul. There's no question about it. And the beautiful thing about the dark night of the soul is that when you have that breakdown and you finally hit your bottom, you are going to break through.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she keeps saying to me, how much longer do I have to feel this? But she's finally feeling, and that's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
She taught herself how to not feel, because the things she experienced growing up were so intense
mm-hmm.
that we had to adapt. She had to adapt to not feel it, because it would have felt like a death.
Mm-hmm.
At a time where her parents were very much alive, but mm-hmm. not very present mm-hmm. and not meeting that emotional need. So we adapt and we disconnect and we disassociate, right? Mm-hmm. We disengage and we become very fragmented and compartmentalized. And now she's on this journey where the feelings are happening and she's drowning in it. And it feels very overwhelming for mm-hmm. her system.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm teaching her and giving her the safe space to be able to feel these things mm-hmm. for the first time in her 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So she doesn't have to be so afraid of feeling it. She's not going to die from the feeling, but this is what her younger self would have felt. And it would have been a very scary thing to have accepted those realities at her age.
Right. Right. That's beautiful. Makes a lot of sense. What else is on your heart about trauma, about what we haven't covered?
You know, it's so interesting. I just redid my website. And as I was redoing it, I wanted to get really, I just wanted to flow with what was on my heart. To your point, the moment somebody came to my homepage, I wanted there to be something that was powerful and strong and authentic to me. And when you go to my website, in big yellow letters, it says, you are not broken.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what's on my heart, because there is a brokenness that we all feel, because we have been fragmented from ourselves when we're learning to develop these coping strategies. We step away from self, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And when we, going back full circle, when we do seek out mental health help, and we don't know that not all practitioners are trauma trained, right? So that's not the inherent curriculum of a therapist or a psychiatrist or a psychologist.
Or even a coach.
Huh?
Or even a coach.
Or even a coach.
Mm-hmm.
It takes extra training and interest and expertise to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So when we are working with people, I've had a lot of people come to me, and this just came up in my supervision today, that when it's not uncommon for people to come to me and say, nothing's worked.
Yep. Absolutely.
I'm so broken. Nothing's worked. So therefore I'm not fixable. And that resonates with me because of how I felt in my 30s.
Absolutely.
It's so important for me to be able to educate people that there's no such thing as broken. You're not broken.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wound that is yet to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
And that wound feels huge because maybe you haven't found the right person to help you find mm-hmm. the way to heal it.
Mm-hmm.
And so really what's on my heart is anybody that's listening that just feels like, oh my God, like nothing ever seems to click. Like I've gone to X number, like I had, I think I'd been through 6 therapists before I finally saw a coach in my early 40s. And it didn't have to be a coach. If I had just seen a trauma trained therapist, I think things would have been different. Mm-hmm. It just happened to lay out that it was a coach. That we assume everybody in the mental health space is trained in all the things that cause mental health challenges mm-hmm. or mental health injury. I don't like to use the word illness mm-hmm. because no one's going to catch it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a wound that just needs to be healed. So when we go through the system and the system's not helping us feel better, part of the reason why is because part of the system is broken as well. And so it's really important for people to hear that everybody has a birthright for feeling better and everybody has the ability to feel better. If you have been working with someone and you don't feel better, it's okay to say, I need to seek someone else out that maybe is trained differently
mm-hmm.
and or in something more in alignment with what has me so stuck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that. Cause I do think that it's like this really fine. I do think it is this really fine line based off of my experience and my development and my journey of wanting to be better. I think like, I feel like self-love is like wanting to be better for yourself, but also being okay with where you are. And we're not really taught to be okay with where we are.
100%. You know? But so many of us, that brokenness is that you're not even in alignment with self. You're not even connected to self.
Very true.
At all.
Very true.
You're completely shadowed out and blocked out mm-hmm. because you had to.
Absolutely.
And yeah. That's where we feel that disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So before we can even self-love, we have to even recognize that we're not even connected
mm-hmm.
to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And what does that journey back to that even look like?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get there, how do I give myself the love and the grace and the space that we deserve?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes. And we do deserve to take up space, all of us.
Yeah.
Oh, you're amazing. You're amazing.
Well, I could literally talk about it for hours.
I know. We both could.
I really could.
Well, tell us where we can find you, what you're working on right now, how can people connect with you?
I think a great way for people to connect with me is on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really, really active there, and I use it simply as a platform for educating. So people can find me there. They just follow my name. I'm sure that'll be right in the show notes, but mm-hmm. it's Stacy Uhrig and the last name is Uhrig. So that's a great way to find me. People slide into my DMs all the time. And then my website.
Mm-hmm.
So my website is flipyourmindset.com. And everything we discussed today is there.
Mm-hmm.
And the ways that I work with people, which is primarily one-to-one coaching, is there, though I do work as a speaker and I also offer workshops.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is available directly on my website as well.
Yay. Well, yeah, like you said, I'll link everything in the show notes. And I so appreciate you and your work. We definitely vibe and align on a lot of things. So I really appreciate you.
Yeah, I appreciate you as well.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
I really, really hope you enjoy this conversation with Stacy. Stacy is one of my people. We really have a lot of the same values about trauma and about, you know, we've walked very similar paths when it comes to our personal healing. And I'm glad that I was able to introduce her to you. Don't forget that you, my friend, are loved, you're supported, there is nothing wrong with you, and that you are perfect as you are. Don't forget to rate and share and review the show. Take the Feminine Dating Archetype quiz in the show notes if you haven't yet to reveal your blocks to love and find your true love match. And finally, if you are open to supporting the show, any donation ranging from 99 cents, $4.99 or $9.99 a month would be greatly received, just to let me know that you're out there, an energy exchange. And of course, I would love a coffee. I love me some coffee. So thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you next time.